Good afternoon, evening, morning, wherever you may be. Hello there, this is John Shomo, and I am introducing episode one of Then and Now, our new little podcast, right here recorded in good old Talmadge, Ohio. First off, before we get going here too much, I would like to thank sincerely my family, my wife Tammy and my son Matt, for their help and encouragement in getting this project going. It's terrific. It's a terrific idea. They thought it was a good idea. Lots of people thought, hey, John, you ought to do a podcast. Nobody helped me more than they did. So I thank them profusely. What we're going to do, hopefully on a weekly basis here, and we're recording this on Tuesday, you'll probably hear it starting Wednesday, is take this in three different parts, try to schedule three different parts each week. The first part will be sort of a facts for the week, what's going on, what has gone on in this week in history, who famous had birthdays in the coming week. That originated from my school teaching career. I started out just about every class with facts for the day. They used to be on little blue cards. They became Google Slides after a while. And it was taught to me. I want to give a thank you to a guy, and I'm not sure whether he's still with us or not, a teacher at Chippewa High School named Carl Doolin, who I was taking a night class with at the University of Akron when I got back into teaching. And he said, to start your class out each day, you ought to have something that's yours. You ought to have something that indicates, you know, to the students, something that you're interested in and what you like, and kind of make it a thing every day. So I made up these cards and put down famous events that happened each day and people who had birthdays. And obviously those have changed over 34, 35 years. That became kind of a hallmark of what I did in my teaching career. So we'll start these out with sort of facts for the week. This week, we have something that we have only once every 4 years. And that would be a leap day. Leap day coming up this Thursday, February 29th. I guess that people who have birthdays on February 29th, who were born on February 29th, from what I hear, they celebrate on March 1st. I would hope they would celebrate at some point every year. For this leap day, I have two birthdays to let you know about and three events from the old blue card. Birthdays, first of all, Ja Rule is 44 today. You guys might know him. Not many of you maybe know Dinah Shore. Dinah Shore was a very successful singer, entertainer. She was born on this day, on February 29th, 1916. She passed away in 1994. What you may not know about Dinah Shore is she was very, very instrumental in the growth of the LPGA, the Ladies Professional Golf Association. Started a tournament out in Southern California that's become one of their five majors. So a happy birthday to the late Dinah Shore. Events that happened, and again, they're few and far between for February 29th. On that date in 1940, actress Hattie McDaniel became the first African-American woman to win an Oscar. She played a role in the great film Gone with the Wind. On this date, I've got to break myself of that habit, don't I? On February 29th, 1968, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band won Album of the Year, which was the first time a rock and roll LP won that Grammy Award. It took them until 1968 to think, well, gee, maybe rock and roll is pretty good. And Sgt. Pepper's broke that barrier finally. It should have happened long before that. On February 29, 1972, the great Henry Aaron became the first Major League Baseball player to earn a $200,000 yearly salary when the Braves signed him to a new three-year deal. That was off of a year, his 1971 season with the Braves, where he had hit 47 home runs, driven in 128 runs, and batted .327. Now, a guy coming off that kind of a year in this environment in baseball today, I think might make a little bit more than $200,000 a year. He might make $200,000 in at bat, to be honest. So there are a few things that happened on February 29th. We only get to do that once every 4 years, so it'll be a while before those resurface. Let's move on for the next week or so. Some highlights from the first few days of March coming up. On March 1st, Ohio gained statehood on that date in 1803, became the 17th state admitted to the Union. We have some birthdays, a couple of birthdays that I want to mention from March 1st. The lead singer of The Who, Roger Daltrey, turns 80 on March 1st. And child actor turned wonderful director and producer, multi-Oscar winning director and producer, Ron Howard, Little Ronnie Howard, to those who remember The Andy Griffith Show. Ron Howard is 70 on March 1st. Happy birthday to him. Moving to March 2nd. On March 2nd, 1962, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the Philadelphia Warriors center, Wilt Chamberlain, perhaps you've heard of him, scored 100 points in an NBA game against the New York Knicks. It actually happened. There's no video of it. Nobody was taking film. The game wasn't played in Philly. As I said, it was played in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And there are some conspiracy types out there who say, well, how do we know Wilt scored 100 points? There's no video. There's no film. Where there is a radio broadcast of it, and there were 5,000 or 6,000 people there and newspapermen and photographers and so forth. Wilt scored 100 points on March 2nd, 1962 against the Knicks. Birthdays on March 2nd, Dr. Seuss, born on that date in 1904. John Bon Jovi will turn 62. And Reggie Bush, who had his Heisman Trophy taken away from him, the great USC star, Reggie Bush turns 39. On March 3rd, a couple of birthdays of note, a couple of former Buckeye wide receivers, Santonio Holmes is 40. Michael Thomas will be 30 on March 3rd. In addition to that, the guy who may be the MVP of the National Basketball Association this season, from the wonderful Boston Celtics, Jason Tatum will turn 30 on March 3rd. March 4th, according to the original Constitution, was Inauguration Day. Presidents were inaugurated every 4 years on March 4th through 1933, FDR's first inaugural. After that, the Constitution was changed, and Inauguration Day now will take place on January 20th and has since 1937. March 5th, anniversary of the Boston Massacre. The Boston Massacre, where five colonists were killed by British soldiers in a standoff in front of the old Custom House in downtown Boston. That took place, as I said, on that date in 1770. Joseph Stalin died of a massive heart attack, the Soviet leader, on March 5th, 1953. And real sad memory here, John Belushi found dead in Beverly Hills in a hotel of drug overdose on March 5th, 1982. What a waste. He was such a talent. March 6th, we'll stop it there. March 6th was Walter Cronkite's final CBS Evening News broadcast as the anchorman, March 6th, 1981. And boy, do we miss Walter Cronkite these days. Three birthdays of note on March 6th that I want to get to. One of my personal favorite ballplayers, athletes of all time, great leader, Willie Stargell of the Pirates, born on March 6th, 1940. Shaquille O'Neal will be 52 on March 6th. And my sister-in-law, Barb, celebrates a birthday on March 6th. And you don't tell how old women are, you know, guys. So happy birthday, Barb. Okay, that's segment one. And on to segment two we go. We're going to address a few topics that are in the news, sports, entertainment areas here. We're going to try to do that each week. We will start with sports. That's the toy store of life, right? Okay, where we get to argue about kind of silly stuff sometimes. College hoops are really going right now, men and women. The women seem to be taking a lot more of the stage than usual, and they probably deserve it. Ohio State at Iowa will be the big game this coming Sunday. It'll be senior day for Caitlin Clark, the Iowa superstar. More about her later. Understand that the Big Ten Women's Tournament next week in Minneapolis is completely sold out. All five sessions are completely sold out. That's over 90,000 tickets sold. The Final Four for the NCAA Women's Division I tournament this year is scheduled for Cleveland, Ohio, the first week of April, and I'm sure those tickets will be mucho expensive, as they say. Again, we'll get back to Caitlin Clark in a bit. A shout out here from me to the Talmadge girls basketball team. They concluded their season this past Saturday. Coach Chrissy Vaughn and her staff have just done an excellent job the last couple of years. I sit at the scorer's table and run the stat board, and I've really enjoyed, and the other people at the table would agree with me, we have really enjoyed watching that team play the last couple of years. Congratulations on another great season to the Talmadge girls basketball team. Now, in men's college basketball, the topic this week seems to be court storming. How do you stop it? How do they get people from rushing onto the court when the home team pulls a big win or a big upset? As you know, those of you that follow the sport, this past weekend in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Wake Forest upset the Duke Blue Devils, which doesn't make me sad, by the way. But it was uncontrollable and dangerous at the buzzer as fans just ran full speed onto the court with one or two ticks left on the clock. Duke star Kyle Filipowski was injured. We don't know how badly. It seems to be not as badly as they originally said. But that's neither here nor there. How can the NCAA or high school or whoever stop fans from coming onto the court? They used to just have like people holding a rope. Well, that's not going to work. They have tried fining schools. I know the SEC has an automatic $100,000 fine for court storming. And it happened just a couple weeks ago. I forget where. And the school just up and wrote the check. I mean, the SEC and the Big Ten particularly are just swimming in television money, mostly for football. And they just pulled out the checkbook and wrote the $100,000 check and really probably didn't do anything about it. It can be dangerous. It'd be great if there was an easy way to stop it. I don't know. I don't really have any super ideas about that. Maybe somebody can, send an email on threegoodquestions.gmail.com, at gmail.com, and give me a suggestion. Give us a suggestion. We'll pass it along if you do have one. Okay. In baseball, real games start sooner than you think. They start in about 3 weeks. The Dodgers and Padres are going to play the first two games of the Major League regular season on March 20th and 21st in, of all places, Seoul, South Korea. Then they're going to come back, and the rest of the teams are going to start 3 or 4 days after that, late March. The big discussion this week, at least in Major League Baseball, has been the uniforms. The uniforms are made by a new manufacturer this year, and some of the guys are a little concerned that the pants are a little bit too see-through, if you will. I think that might be a problem, the white pants particularly. There's been some talk about how the names have shrunk on the back of the uniforms and they're harder to read. Hats off to the Kansas City Royals, who refused to go that route and put the big letters back on their uniforms. Okay. Second topic, entertainment. I don't really know anything I can add to the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift saga. It's kind of neat, I think. One of the great football stars and the biggest star in music have a relationship, and good for them, and I hope it's a long and healthy one. There are 4 new Beatles movies coming out in 2027. Yeah, I had to go there. One full-length film from each of the 4 members' perspectives. I'll be interested to see how that goes. Will I watch them? Yeah, probably. Why wouldn't I? Now, a movie that my wife and I just watched this past week in about 4 different segments was the movie Oppenheimer. Dr. Robert Oppenheimer, as you may know, is the physicist credited with the creation of the atomic bomb in 1945. Obviously, it wasn't just him alone, but he is the main character. He was in charge of the Los Alamos facility. That movie is expected to win the Oscar for Best Film. We watched it. We thought it was good. I kind of thought it was a little confusing because it went back and forth and back and forth in time from the Los Alamos days up to congressional investigations in the 1950s, back, forth, back, forth, etc. Maybe that works for a lot of people. I might have liked to have seen it just go linear there in terms of the timing. But be interested to see what you all think. If you have a opinion on the movie Oppenheimer, let us know. Segment three here of our topics, I hate going into this, but I need to, is politics. And today's thought that I have is, why is Nikki Haley, the former governor of South Carolina, still running for the Republican nomination for president? She seems to be to really have no chance at getting the nomination at this point. What I would guess, and they won't say this out loud because they want to, you know, keep up appearances, I would guess that they're just kind of hanging around in case the former president's legal issues and his declining health, he's not doing very well, kind of catch up to him. And if former President Trump, for whatever reason, is not able to claim the Republican nomination in Milwaukee in July, then Nikki Haley was the last other person standing, and she would stand to benefit from that. I'm guessing that's why they still are running. They seem to have plenty of money to keep a campaign going. It's just a very strange situation. For those of you in Ohio here, the Ohio primary is coming up on March 19th. We'll have more on this in a couple weeks and a couple more episodes as that date draws near. And I think that's all we want to go into in politics right now. So we'll move on to part three and the final part of what I hope to be a weekly podcast here. One way I came to end my classes when I was teaching was to have the students come up with three good questions for me. Emphasis on good questions. They weren't always quote-unquote, good questions, but a ton of them were, and I give credit to our students for doing that. So I've got three questions today. Please, if you have any questions you'd like me to address, you know the email. It's on the logo. It's threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That's threegoodquestions spelled out at gmail.com. This one came in on three good questions. From an old chum of mine, Firestone High School class of 1977, John Ellis, and he wanted me to address how we recognize the accomplishments of Caitlin Clark and Pistol Pete Maravich as to the NCAA all-time scoring record. Those of you that follow the sport may know that if Caitlin Clark has two more really good games, which she will, she will have scored more points in her college basketball career than the late, great Pistol Pete Maravich did at LSU. He is the men's record holder for points in a career. How do we recognize Caitlin Clark's record without diminishing Pistol Pete's? Well, I think you can do both. I think it's rather apples and oranges in a couple of ways. First of all, and I don't mean to diminish Caitlin Clark's achievements at all. She is must-watch TV for me. If I was women's basketball team is playing, I find it on the TV and I watch. She is such a tremendous offensive player, not just shooter and scorer. She is a terrific passer, and it's fun to watch basketball players like that. I don't mean to diminish her in any way. That's the problem here. I think that's what John's addressing in his question. Pistol Pete played in the late 60s. Maybe into 1970. He was a hero of mine as a kid. When I played high school basketball at Firestone, I wore a pair of floppy socks because he did. He played 3 years. He played less games. There was no three-point line when Pistol Pete played in college. If there had been, he would have put the record out of sight because he would literally shoot from anywhere. He was also a terrific passer. You know, he was a marvel to watch. I loved it. Not very many games were on TV when I was a kid. But when LSU was on, you made sure you watched Pete Maravich for sure. There's a connection there to our family in a way. My father played college basketball at Davis and Elkins College in West Virginia, in 1950. And the JV coach, the assistant coach at Davis and Elkins in 1950 was a man named Press Maravich, who, while my dad was playing for him, had a son named Pete born to him. And that's the connection. Pistol Pete's dad coached my dad. So there. But Caitlin Clark is going to be always remembered for growing the game of women's basketball. That's maybe her greatest achievement in the end. Pistol Pete didn't need to really grow men's college basketball by himself. He didn't really. That probably didn't need to happen as much as it did on the women's side. But hats off to Caitlin Clark. I do hope they lose to the Buckeyes. They play them Sunday, and then Ohio State will be the number one seed in the Big Ten women's tournament. Not unlikely that they'll play for a third time up in Minneapolis. So if I were coaching the Buckeyes this Sunday, I'd be pretty vanilla about it. But there's your answer, John. Thank you for the question. That's a really good question. The next two are from one of my students from the first semester this year at THS, Roman Rinaldi. Hi, Roman. The first one I'll address is, what is my favorite teaching memory? I really don't know how to answer that. There have been so many. It's a long career. It was a great career. I really enjoyed it. I feel fortunate to have taught in such a great district as Talmadge. Most of the students were tremendous, and it's hard to pick one. I'll just say this kind of vaguely. Whenever a student kind of got it, whenever the light bulb came on in his or her head, I really got a kick out of that. And I think if you'd ask my colleagues, they'd probably say something similar. That's what you live for as a teacher, okay? Roman's other question, we have this coming up here in about 5 or 6 weeks. Who's going to win the Masters this year? Boy, if I knew, I'd run off and make a few bets. Let me just throw out a name here to those of you who follow golf, and we'll see what you think. I would beware of Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka, five-time major winner, now plays on the LIV Tour. He's virtually the only guy that plays on the LIV Tour that I really don't mind that he did it. I really abhor that whole scene. But Brooks Koepka, when he was offered the millions of dollars to jump to LIV, he didn't know if he was going to play again. He had a very injury-prone career going. He had won some majors and then really had some serious injuries. And he took the money because I think he didn't know how much longer he could play or if he could play effectively anymore. He won the PGA Championship last year. I checked, which I never do, I checked the LIV Golf results. They've only had two events this year. I checked that yesterday. His team finished seventh in one of them and won the last one. So he must be rounding into form. He contended for the Masters title last year. If Brooks Koepka is healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes around and wins at Augusta this year. So there's my answer to you, Roman. And boy, I really don't know, but there's a guy to look for anyway. Okay, that will conclude the episode one of Then and Now. Thanks for joining us. We'll get it out to you just as we got out the preview episode of the podcast. We're going to plan on doing this once a week and maybe releasing them around Wednesday of each week. So look for that coming up 1 week from now. But you can check us out now. Give us any comments, threegoodquestions@gmail.com for your questions. And we hope you'll join us again next week for another episode of Then and Now. This is John Shomo. Have a good day.